I don't know why these people want to outfit and take their outfitted hunters guiding. You don't charge these people very much. They're maybe local residents or people who come up for caribou. You provide them with a few necessities. In some cases, in a non-resident hunting caribou, you've got to provide them with a rent, equipment tour, whatever you want to call it, proper gear, so they don't get themselves into trouble. But I don't want to guide my outfitted hunters. For my hunters, I do, because it costs me. And I get paid well for them. But I have no sympathy for an outfitter who's trying to be a guide and he's not licensed. But there are honest outfitters. There is a need for an outfitter.
What about the safety aspect of non-resident outfitters?
When you take a non-resident, you've got to provide the same thing as a guide in some cases. You've got to provide him with, say, you're down in your country, if he comes up with a shabby little old tent and the wind blows him away, he's out there freezing, you know. You've got to take care of these people in that respect. But you're not providing them with a guide. You're not providing them with a sleeping bag and this and that. You're not providing them with a T-bone steak every night. But you are providing them with something that'll keep them out of trouble. Savvy in the woods has got nothing to do with where you're from. And if I own a liquor store in California, can I come up here and go hunting and still own a liquor store in California? I'm still bringing money into the state, and as long as I do my job in a professional manner, professionalism is what should count. Not where you're from. And there's a lot of guides, too, that now they come up here in the summertime and then they go out and spend 6 months outside. A lot of them. So why can't a guy come up here for 6 months? What's the difference there? I can't see any difference.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. I mean, you would define the difference between what you do as an outfitter and what you do as a guide. At what point does your guiding start?
First thing is the money. Generally, a guided hunt is $10,000, an outfitted hunt is $1,500 or $2,000. You do not accompany the people in the field. You determine when you book an outfitted hunt if the person is capable of being out in the field himself. You've got to be very careful. After you've determined that, you take them out, and as we got into yesterday, you've got 23, 24 years of experience flying around and hunting in this state. You take them to a place where there's game, and they have an honest chance of killing game, and then you drop them off, and you forget about them until perhaps you check on them. And then you let them go out, take their game by themselves. Pack
so it's
their
whether
meat.
Or not you're with them.
It's whether or not you accompany them.
Okay. Are most of the people that you outfit residents or non-residents?
Most of them up to this point have been residents. And they have, I believe, a right to use my skills and have a right to my experience. Or else they walk off the highway and don't kill anything. All my residents took sheep this year, and I don't take out a great deal, but a few, just like I said, to supplement my income.
Where are your areas?
My guide areas?
Yeah, your guide areas.
I don't have any. I have to lease areas. Yes. Many times when you're flying, you wouldn't, if the weather gets bad, you might want to remain in camp.
Okay.
forward. If the weather is bad, you may remain in camp, or perhaps if the guys come in, they're tired and hungry and cold, and you're there, you might whip them up something before you leave, you know what I mean? They want to get out of their wet clothes. There's a lot of legitimate reasons you might remain in camp. A lot. And you might be staying there yourself. Rather than paying Yelling on the Lodge $150 a night, you might want to stay in your own camp.
With an outfitter, in your mind, have a good reason for staying out there the entire time that the hunters are out? Or would it only be...
In my case, yeah, everything varies, you know. In my case, I wouldn't, because I'm going back and forth all the time. But generally, I would say they wouldn't stay in the camp the whole time. But for instance, I had a camp this fall where I had my non-resident bear hunters. And I brought a few of my outfitted hunters in there and dropped them off in the hills nearby so that they could take game. But I didn't stay with those people, but I remained in the guide camp the whole time.
Well, when you're drawing the distinction between an outfitter being at camp with the hunters, as opposed to going out from the camp, would there be any reason for an outfitter to go with the hunters beyond the camp?
Well, I've had a couple of instances this year where friends of mine, they took out, as I stated earlier, you have to discriminate. When you take an outfitted hunt, that the person can pretty much take care of himself. You can't just take anybody. And the one guy came in, he said, oh, I shot a caribou 5 miles from here, and I can't get the meat. So the outfitter went out and assisted him, and found a caribou about 20 minutes from camp, and helped him. But I don't know what you want to say that is, guiding, or he assisted him. He did not guide him, but he did help him pack the meat. He shouldn't have taken that person. He shouldn't have booked that person on an outfitted hunt. That person should have been on a guided hunt. You have to be careful there.
A couple of short questions. The bill, the House bill that we're looking at, would say that providing camping equipment in the field is guiding. Is that contrary to your idea of what guiding is?
Absolutely contrary. Guiding is guiding. Guiding is taking a man and taking a large amount of money from him, providing him with camping equipment, judging his trophy for him, packing his meat for him, accompanying him the whole time he's there, skinning his trophy, caring for his trophy until a taxidermist gets it, having everything. Now, you've got to be able to, when you're doing an outfitted hunt, you've got to be able to provide, say on the Alaska Peninsula, something for these people. Even residents will get themselves into trouble. You've got to be able to provide. They can't carry a 10-man army tent up here in the airplane with them. They just can't do it. This bill puts the outfitters out of business and also takes away your right to say, Rick, give me the benefit of your 23 years flying in these glaciers and take me and drop me for a sheep. You will not be able to do that. You will have to hire a guide.
So when you say then that person who provides an established camp or provides any sort of equipment or even services at camp is still doing outfitting and is not going into guiding.
Right, I would say he's outfitting, and I think it can be done, and the guides can get along as the outfitters don't step on somebody's toes. There's 586,000 square miles in Alaska. There's many, many guide areas that are being used only a fraction. There's a lot of room to go out and outfit, and as I said, bring money into the state, help the economy, legally, without stepping on your neighbor's toes.
One last question. Would it create a problem for you as an outfitter, or for outfitters generally, do you think, if only registered or licensed guides could use and advertise
Oh, yes, it certainly would. It would create a great deal of problem. And, like I said, I don't know why they want to do this, you know, because they, registered guides certainly don't want the outfitting business, because they're getting 10 grand per hunt. The outfitter's getting 15. Why do they want this?
Well, the objection has been raised that in other states, outfitters are called, or guides are called outfitters, and that the terms are synonymous, and people coming up from the lower 48 sometimes confuse the terms and think that somebody who is advertised as an outfitter is licensed to guide you.
I understand that. The outfitter has to call himself something, though.
But would it be a problem to find another term to call themselves?
When I advertise for that, I say self-guided hunts on my outfitted deals. I don't know. I haven't even given that any thought about thinking up another name.
Rick, how many other outfitters are in your lease area besides you?
It's a big country. I don't run into a lot. I lease an area from Macarlo down on the peninsula, and nobody gets where I go anyway. I'm up on the side of the mountain, and maybe some guy's down there outfitting. He's not going to take his plane where I do because he's not getting any money for his clients. He's not going to. Every time you land up there, it's a controlled crash, and you do $500 damage. So he's not going there for.
Yeah, you say there. There's a lot of area out there. You don't have that many outfitters in your area now, but it seems like there's no restriction on outfitting, and anybody can come up here and outfit pretty much.
There is basically there. You're right. There's not very many restrictions on outfitting, but when you restrict the outfitter, you're restricting the public, the non-guided hunters. Now, guides they have a lot of restrictions on them, but they've also legislated the laws to where a hunter has no choice. He must, by law, use that guide, and he gets a lot of money. He should have some restrictions and responsibilities. So I think you have to be careful how that you legislate these outfitters. Now, this bill here, it looks to me like it's a political assassination. It's killing all the outfitters. Boom. So I don't know why we should be killed. We're honest people. There's a few bad apples, I understand that, but so there are a few bad guides.
Well, that's what we put legislation in for, to discuss it, and then maybe come up with something better, or maybe kill it.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, is there somebody else here in Anchorage that would like to testify? Yeah.
My name is Les Crank, and I represent the company I own. It's called Alaska Bush Adventures. You need to hold this down?
Is it Bush? Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
And I wasn't prepared to do my testimony today. I thought it was going to be tomorrow, but I'll give it a try. First of all, my definition of a guide and definition of an outfitter is two different things. My service stops, I believe, where the guiding service starts. And because I don't go on the field to find the animal, I'm not responsible to find an animal and to cape them out and to pack them out and to take care of the trophy care and take them in and out of the field. There's a lot of things that an outfitter doesn't provide that a guide does provide. I provide a service that for hunters that don't want a guide. There's a lot of hunters that really don't need a guide, and there's probably a lot of hunters that do need a guide. I'm trying to offer service to the guys that can hunt on their own but don't necessarily want to come all the way to Alaska and freight all their gear up that they would need. And Alaska is a lot different than the lower 48, and the type of gear you need is on the average a lot different too. So they appreciate somebody that can provide them with gear that will hold up to the weather. That's basically what I do. I provide them with gear, and I do video photography of the trip. That seems to be something that they really like. And it's kind of a new concept, I guess. with, you know, the way the video cameras are these days, it allows a guide to carry one around and film it. And when I offer the gear rental business and the camp cook type thing, and river raft trips that I do, which is mostly what I do, it all works as a package, and I don't feel that I'm guiding at all. The only guiding I'm actually doing would be, might be guiding the raft down the river, because most of the outfitters, I mean most of the hunters come up and do river rafting trips to go on a river that they've never seen or been on before. It's kind of dangerous, and I think I provide a service safety factor there with knowing, you know, the rivers that I go on, and so that they don't have to end up calling the whoever it is that comes and gets them in a helicopter or whatever to get in a bind. I try not to be around any of the guides. I only do a few trips, and if I have called guides up before and talked to them and told them what I had in mind and asked them if I'd be in their way, and they told me no. So that's the last thing I want to do, is step on somebody's toes and, you know, try to take the resource away from them. As an outfitter, I think that being in the field, I tend to keep them honest somewhat in regards to the amount of meat they take out, because I know that that's a big factor. A lot of people just want to come up and shoot the animals for the antlers and make excuses on why they didn't have the meat. So I think that that's something that I also provide as being an outfitter. I think that the cooking part shouldn't be considered as guiding. And the river raft, the rowing that I do on my river rafts, and that part of the trip shouldn't be considered guiding. And my video photography, I don't think should be considered as under the guiding term. And as it is right now, you can even pack meat. Now there's a lot of people that aren't even physically able or just flat too lazy and don't want to pack their meat. And I've had people offer me $500 just to pack a moose out. Now that's an awful lot of money, but just to pack a moose out. But, you know, that particular individual had a bad back, and he wanted to shoot a moose, but he couldn't pack the meat. But he didn't want to pay, you know, to hire a guide just so he could still shoot a moose. So, you know, also emergency situations. I had some guys out this year, and it rained real heavy, and the river rose 8 feet or so in 24 hours, and they wanted to, I have radios I can contact aircraft with, and they wanted me to call an aircraft and try to get the Coast Guard to come and get us, or whoever, you know, and it really was an emergency situation. We just had to move to higher ground. So I think, you know, just being there in that kind of situation, keep people from panicking and really getting in trouble, you know, is the viable service that I offer. And I have a business license for commercial photography and recreation, which I was told would cover my outfitting. And I have permits, land access permits for all the areas I go in that require them. And I have outfitter's insurance, what they call outfitter's insurance. And I try to be within the laws of what I do. And I realize that there is a problem, but I don't want to be excluded, you know. And I think the wording in the bill right now would definitely make me into a felon if I continued, you know.
Didn't you say you checked on, you know, what was legal and legal to do?
Yeah, who I checked with was the Fish and Wildlife Protection. And then I talked to just the Game and Fish. You know, I just call and on the phone and tell whoever answered the phone what I was trying to get, what kind of information I was trying to get, and they'd refer me to someone in the department that could answer my questions. And that's who I would talk to.
Okay, Person of Pearson. You say you have outfitters insurance. Could you explain exactly what it is that you have coverage to do and perhaps why you don't have coverage to do?
Well, I think what it is, it's like a liability insurance in case somebody gets hurt through my negligence, basically. If I do something or tell them to do something, you know, and they break a leg or twist to drown or something like that, because of my negligence, I don't provide maybe life jackets for them or something like that. And then I think it's the NFRA, the National Forest Recreation Association, also requires you to join their group, which I'm not real sure why, but it has something to do with because of the I'm using National Forest lands, and you have to belong to them to use their lands. And it's also some kind of liability insurance. I think maybe in case I was to be destructive to an area or something like that, to reclaim it or something. I might be wrong about that. But basically, it's just a liability insurance that's required. I can't remember who told me that to even get the insurance right now. Anyway, I do have it, and it's basically the same thing I think that guides kind of get. It's based on the number of man hours that you have in the field, or man days, or something like that. And I have the minimum policy right now, which I don't remember, 100 man hours or something. I can't remember how many hours. 100 man days or something like that.
So do you think your coverage is the same as what the...
Well, I believe it's the same type of insurance that they get, because I go through a Cathcart Limited, and they do guides and outfitters insurance. They're probably one of the main ones, at least to my knowledge, in Anchorage that do write up. Not very many people at all write up. They're the only ones I know in Anchorage that have an underwriter for that kind of insurance.
And this is who?
Cathcart Limited. They're an agent.
Okay. Could we have staff check with them and see what it is that they're writing, whether or not they differentiate between what else guide students, what is their coverage goes? Interesting question. And one more question for you. Do you see any reason that we would need to regulate what you are doing in terms of either the areas that we can use or anything? Could be a time when there are going to be too many outfitters
yeah.
and they need to be regulated. Are you there? What do you see coming?
Well, I didn't realize it was such a problem already, but I was surprised to see that there was 300, they figure there's 300 outfitters in the state. But I'm not against regulation in no way. I think it needs to be done. And I can see that outfitters can very well abuse the resource. And so I'm not opposed to regulation. I suggested that there be some kind of a paper trail. You know, if I feel that most of the dishonest outfitters, first of all, probably don't have an Alaska business license. They don't have insurance. Probably most all of them are out of the state. And they just come in and they go and they take all their money with them back to the lower 48 or wherever they're from. Probably it would have to be from lower 48. And I think, you know, that should be curtailed. I don't feel that's right, that they don't pull the part of the license and they don't, you know... Like I read in there, there's somebody, I've read three or four places, I don't know, nobody says to have any particulars, but I guess there's an outfitter that takes 30 or 40 moose out of a guide's area. I think that's abuse. I think that they should have a paper trail to show how many hunters they had, maybe, and then how many animals their hunters took in what areas and stuff. So, you know, it doesn't become a problem. And I think that if they don't do that, well, then maybe they should be, more heavily fined than what the law says they're liable for right now, you know, which doesn't seem to deter anybody, I guess.
Because I remember yesterday you said you had between 12 and 15 people.
Yeah.
This year that you took out. How many of those were residents versus non-residents, and how did you advertise? How did you get those people?
I had two residents this year, and the rest were people from the lower 48. And I advertised in a hunting magazine. And as I do VHS photography and outfit trips. And I also in there, which I realize I probably should change because it is deceptive, I have guided outfitted trips, which I do. My guiding is only fishing trips. I don't do any guided hunting. And when somebody books with me, I talk to them always on the phone, and I tell them that I'm not a guide. I have had two guys come up this year and try to say that I told them I was a guide, which we straightened that out in the Big Curry. They were just trying to get me to go out and find them animals, and I wasn't going to do it. But they knew I wasn't a guide to begin with. They were just hardheads. You know.
So you would agree that there's a semantics problem, that
Yeah, there is a problem.
What to call yourself.
And I think there should be some regulations and some paper trail, but I just don't feel that I should be put out of business by the stroke of the pen, because I have, you know, also invested over $50,000 in gear and stuff, and I guess I just have to have a big yard sale, because there ain't no way I could use all these wraps and radios and tents and, you know, all these different pieces of gear.
So yesterday you said that as you're floating down the river, you don't help the hunter choose where he or she wants to hunt, but on the other hand, you're there with a camera to take pictures, so once they decide to trace off in direction A, you follow them?
Right. That's basically what I'm trying to do, is just provide them with a videotape of the trip, which is a lot better than still pictures or just telling somebody about it. You know, it's just an idea I came up with. I'm not trying to violate the law, you know, and be guiding them there. And I realize that, like one of the guys said yesterday, anybody can start getting a camera and say they're video photographers. So there has to be some regulation. But I have four cameras, and this year I rented two, and I have a bunch of equipment, and that's what I do, you know. That's part of the service I operate, and I don't guide. My brother's a guide in Arizona, and I know what people expect when you are on a guided hunt. And I don't think that running my river rafts and doing the camp cooking and showing the guys how to set my gear up, my tents and stuff up initially. After that, you know, unless they're bird brain, they can do it on their own. But they pick out the areas they want to stop and hunt. They decide what they want to hunt before they even come up. They go in the direction they want. They turn around and come back when they want. And all I try to do is film the scenery and the actual. People really like the actual shooting of the animals, you know. I mean, it's pretty graphic sometimes, but they love that. And that's something that I found is a sellable commodity.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to go to Juno, to Carl Lane. I understand you have time constraints.
Yes, I have a 5-minute camp. Are we on the air here?
Yeah, go ahead, Carl.
I'm a master guide in Southeast. I used to guide in the interior 25 years ago or so, but when we had our three areas that we had to take, I took all of Southeastern, which made the three areas. The outfitting problem is just really beginning in Southeastern. I see it in operation. I see it being advertised. One advertisement I saw is that our guide, it was an outfitter's advertising, that our guides know where to gain you. So they're also posing as guides and they're helping with the field. Also know one party from Petersburg area that is guiding black bear hunters. The man accompanies them in the field. He can drive both on the boat always. He skins the bear. He does everything we do. He's actually guiding. But he's not operating on brown bear. Operating on black bears and possibly gold. Now, as far as safety in the field, people are concerned about endangering human life. I saw a party in Oakland Bay area in the fjord country, in the gold country. This officer was from California. He had two clients with him. He went up on a mountain. I know that mountain personally. I've hunted it for over 35 years. The man came down because he drained his leg very badly and couldn't continue. He brought the camp down, and we could visibly see the two other hunters on top of the mountain. It was about dark. It was freezing that night. They had no food. They had no shelter. They had nothing but the rifle. Now, what became of them, I don't know. They had a camp on the beach. They had no way to communicate. Those kind of operations are very poor operations. It just seems to me that every one of these that I know of, that I've heard of, there's something illegal in the operation. Most of them that I know about are actually in the field, and they are guiding. They're doing the same service as we are. They say that they're outfitters. and the guides are not outfitters, well, we certainly are not outfitters. I advertise as a guide and outfitter. You have to be an outfitter to take a guide and party in the field. And I've certainly got a lot more than $1,000 in my outfit. I'm built up over the year. I have a 58-foot boat. I have about 20 outboard motors. I have all kinds of gear. The problem is really great in the north. I know, and I have a lot of friends up there in the guiding profession for 30 years or more, and I keep hearing these atrocious stories about what's happening in areas that are most terrible when they come in, wipe out an area, move on from another. I don't have any solutions to it, because every time you think of something, it's unconstitutional or something, or it's got something to do with our low economy right now. It just seems like we're going to just wipe out the game and then try to cure the problem that it's all gone. I have nothing, but I can't think of a darn way you can curb this the way everyone is thinking about it. I'll try to answer any questions if anyone had them.
Thank you, Carl. Are there any questions? Swamp or Davidson, do you have a question?
Wiping out the game. I think if they talk to the biologist, they'll say that game is on the increase everywhere.
Excuse me, this is the general.
I think I got the gist of the question. When you have operations that are not legal people are not responsible and they're not regulated, a lot of these animals are never turned in. They're never tagged. People do not even buy tags. There's cases that are pending now and in the courts and whatnot where the people who were apprehended, they did not have any tags. How would the game department know?
I think the game department's been doing a real good job so far this year. They've arrested quite a few of these illegal operators already, and they're aware of these illegal operators that are operating right now. And,
yeah.
I think, you know,
you're broken up so bad. You sound like you're in a bad storm someplace,
Yeah.
I really can't get the gist of it.
Yeah, Carl, we're going to have Fish and Game here tomorrow, too. Are you going to be in attendance tomorrow?
I'd like to come down. That's another thing. You know, I'm the only public member. There might be one, might be a second one left. I'm the only one in June. We have 30,000 people around here, and for 2 days I've been sitting here by myself. That's another thing I don't understand. The only way I found out about this meeting was through a guy friend of mine in Sitka. He called me up and told me about it, so I thought I would come down and listen.
Yeah, this won't be the last hearing on it, but our mailing system did get messed up there. But the LIO had a bunch of publications out there, I think. Okay?
Okay.
And Carl, if you can let other people know about tomorrow, we're just going to be taking testimony tomorrow, too.
All right, I'll call two people.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Davidson and Swackhammer, do you have any questions so far? If not, Harry, can we go on to the next witness?
Could you stand by a minute and I'll check with Swackhammer?
Go I use horses. I've got approximately 9 horses that I use, and I have a pretty expensive operation to do. And I consider myself a legal outfitter. The money I make here in Delta goes right back into the economy of Delta. It what I do in the fall keeps doing helps me keep doing what I like to do in the summer, giving horseback rides and trying to do 3 to 5 day learn to pack in a wilderness school. I buy hay from several farmers in Delta. I buy grain from farmers in Delta, plus the co-op. I buy all my groceries here, my gas here. I live here 12 months out of the year. I'm doing a legitimate business. I've got a good reputation with the public and also with Fish and Game. I don't have to advertise. It's strictly word of mouth. And people know when they talk to me that it's strictly an unguided, have it your own way trip when they go out there. And I just don't understand. I don't understand why there's so much pressure on outfitters in general. The people that are doing this illegally, they should be busted. You're not going to stop them by shutting down all the outfitters, the legal ones. I think the outfitters and guides can probably work something out, whichever area they're working in. If they would get together and discuss it with each other, maybe they can work off with a solution without having to shut everything off. I don't think they should be a select group of people that can control the fish and game resources in this state. These resources belong to the people, and I believe the people, outfitters feel a need for people that are too old to get out there or feel like they might be not physically fit to get out there. Maybe they're not comfortable out there around animals, bears or whatnot. Maybe they don't feel like they can pack in a camp or pack out an animal. What we're doing is we're filling a gap that the middle class people can't afford a guide. And if most of the guys, if they're booking out of state or foreign people to come over here, I think we're pushing the people that want to afford a guide or want to go out with a guide, we're pushing them to Canada. So we're losing a lot of revenue in state. And I don't believe that we're hurting the areas as bad as people say. I think the general public puts a lot of pressure in the areas, even though there's an outfitter in there. There's got to be a way that you can control outfitters just like the guys are controlled, whether it be with quotas or areas or whatever. I don't think you should have dropped the transporter license either. I think that was a mistake. You had forms to fill out there. You had revenue for the state. If anything, you should have, maybe you could have just attached that to all outfitters and air taxis, because air taxis take in more people than an outfitter ever dreamed of. But the general public has probably more impact on an area than an outfitter does, I believe. And a guide has a heck of a lot of impact on any one given area. And there's a lot of illegal guides up here in this state that aren't getting caught. And they do it every day. They fly and hunt the same day. They spot game and they radio it down, or they land and they tell the assistants they've got that where the game is at. And that's not very, very good. There's a lot of guys, I believe, that misrepresent themselves by advertising that they have something there that they don't. They also advertise the type of camps they have that they can't produce. They'll take people out on freeze-dried food, put them in a pup tent, and walk them to death. And the people aren't in shape to do that. So there's probably a lot of unhappy people that go out with guys for $12,000 that would probably feel like they're not getting their money's worth when they go out with them. I don't have anything against guys as far as I know several personally. I have an assistant guide's license, and I intend on being a guide one of these days. But I have an expensive operation with my horses. I can't go out for $50 a day and take 9 horses out and expect to make a living. Also, my horses are not machines. I can't turn them loose. People loose with a horse that don't have the slightest idea what they're doing. They appreciate somebody being there to hold those horses, to saddle and unsaddle them. That way my horses don't get saddle sore. And that assures my horses that they get grass several times a day while the hunter's out looking for game or doing whatever he wants to do. If they get game, that's great. If they don't get game, what they paid for was the use of those horses and a comfortable camp. Getting the game is all up to them, and they all know that when they go out with an outfitter. I don't believe that you can stop the illegal activities just by shutting down outfitters. outfitters in general. You're still going to have the same illegal people guiding, whether they be registered guides without areas, or if they're outfitters that are sneaking around anyway. I just don't believe this is going to be a solution. I agree there's got to be a solution somewhere, and I think that there needs to be a whole lot more work in the public, the general public, not just outfitters and guides, need to be more aware of what is trying to be taken away from. I don't think the general public would appreciate the fact that they're told they can't go out with anybody they want to and do it their own way. Air taxis are still going to be in operation. They're still going to drop 150 or 200 people off at one airstrip or two airstrips, or they're going to make more airstrips, and they're going to encroach the area that a guide already has anyway. So just by knocking down an outfitter that's trying to make an honest living and being legal, it's not the answer. And I would like to specify again tomorrow also.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions, Brian? Hearing none, I'll go to Frank Hammer and Saldana. Did you have a question?
One moment, please. Thank you for waiting. I guess I should have moved the phone in here. Are you going to continue voting? Problem with operators that I feel that they need to address is
take a strong look at it, at pushing that throughout the state. Alaska's a bright spot in the whole world right now, or in the United States, particularly as far as tourism is concerned, is that they have to have some controls on it, or else in the long run, we're going to end up not having anything left over. And it includes the outfitters, the sport fishermen, and everybody else. And, you know, we can't just continue to rate village art. I think it's a pretty fine line. The main thing that I look at is exactly what that guide or outfitter does. And when it comes to guiding, a guide to me is one that takes that hunter into the field. And again, we're going to get into the definition of what is in the field. But a guide takes the hunter into the field and spots his game for him, or helps him spot the game, helps him stop that game, and actually is there and helps tape it out. Everything that goes with it. An outfitter, on the other hand, sets up a camp or sets up a camp, but does not at any point in time take that hunter with him and go into the field. So again, we're going to get down, I think, to the definition of in the field. We get down to what's the difference between an outfitter and a guide.
So one of the
things
that I've heard about is whether
yes, I think it is. In my business, for example, we use skiffs and we transport the hunters around the Bay Area that I'm in, and drop them off, and then we go back and use them to pick them up. I don't consider that guiding. I consider that a transporting or an outfitting service. I bring them back to camp, and we have the cabins for them, and eventually we'll have a cooking facility where we will actually cook their meals at the point in time they cook their own. But yes, I feel that that's an outfitter. Not going to the field and doing hunting. So, and that's what I think a guide really does. Again, it's a fine line, and I think you're going to have to define what is in the field. I think that the population of people who are coming to Alaska is so great that there is a need for an outfitter, and there is a need for the guide. And I'm hoping that throughout all these hearings, that's what you'll end up with the hearings. I have not tried to define the difference between transporter and outfitter. I kind of classify them as the same.
Okay, but you were asking if we should dispose of the air charges or just the transport. So you think those tanks would go down to the airport?
Every outfitter ought to have to file a report with the industry so that the least efficient team has the manage the resource. Also, you have your list of outfitters. If every outfitter had to have a license for a permit, at least you have a tool for fish and wildlife protection also for your enforcement. Until you actually get that list of outfitters down and create that list, then they have no method of trying to control it. At least 75% of my hunters are residents that are, like I said in my statement, at least 75% of them are residents who are tired of living in a place.
Yes, sir. At this
question of estimation of human guilt is coming up, and it is central to the question of what guiding is. From your point of view, do you have any problems with the definition of the House bill of human guilt as sort of a definition by exclusion, which would say human guilt does not include being present in a home with living quarters or in a lodge or base camp? Do you think that this is an adequate or professional definition of human guilt, or does that differ from your concept of what human guilt means?
I think that this is a too narrow a description, because it has to be broadened out to cover things like I do. Like I said, I transport hunters from my base camp out to bay and drop them off, and I go back and pick them up. The same thing would apply as if I had a spike camp set up someplace and I was using horseback to move hunters into there and then haul hunters into meet up. According to the way the law is written, or this legislation is written, I don't think that I would legally be able to do that. Under the current law, I think it would be legal for me to, when you're writing it here, I don't think I'd be able to do that. I think that's the service of an outfitter can perform without being a guide.
Do you think that it might be easier to describe the activities of hunting instead of where the hunting takes place? In other words, what if we were to eliminate this concept of human field and, just for purposes of argument here today, that guiding is accompanying a hunter or a hunting party while hunting, and by hunting I mean stalking and spotting and all these other activities. Does that in any way in your mind get around the problem of the definition of the field as hunting? Or is the concept of when a person is hunting to elicit itself?
What the guy does? Did you get my last statement?
No, I didn't.
I'm sorry, I must have been talking anytime yet. The way you presented that last statement, it sounds like that would answer the problem, and it would define it a little bit better than what is in the field says in the legislation. Yeah.
Perhaps I need to
ask
guidance on the line here. But would it be your understanding that when a hunter is at camp, or when a hunter is transported to or from the camp or field or what have you, that he's not in the act of hunting?
Yeah, that's correct. One of the problems you face with is, for example, in my camp, my camp is set up right in the prime deer country, and I have deer walking around my camp at all times. I don't let hunters shoot deer there, but if one does, shoot one out the back door or something, then I think that the way the laws are being proposed here, I would be really in big trouble.
Thank you, Mary Jo. Is there another witness who's going next? We have no one else who wishes to talk at this time.
This is Barb again. Fairbanks and Don would like to testify now. He'll be right with you.
Okay.
Good morning, Representative Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. There's a few points that I want to bring up. I keep hearing that the outfitters want to be regulated. I'm a registered guide for the state of Alaska and have a guide area in the Brooks Range. They want to be regulated, and we have the regulations already in statute, and if they want to be regulated, they can fall right into the regulations that we already have. A lot of people are, I think, when they look at this Bill 191 and 183, they think that this is a regulation against one group of people, the outfitters. But this, in fact, is our guide law that the guides have to follow. And they're fighting this few words that's been inserted in here to regulate the people, and but yet they want regulations. Another point I want to bring up is that we have non-residents that can come to this state and be outfitters. We also have aliens that can come here and be outfitters and bring alien hunters in. The only thing they can't do is they would have to get a registered guide, but they can still be out there outfitting. And it seems that we're playing on a word, outfitter. All over the country, this has been brought up several times, that outfitting, if you go to Montana, an outfitter is a guy, and a guy is an outfitter. It's the same word. We've got a group of people playing on a word. If they want to be, provide these services, let's use the word transport. That would solve a lot of the problems there, too. I think that's about all I have to say at this time. I appreciate you listening.
Yes, it's Mr. William Walkman. He'll be here in just a moment. Thank you.
My name is Bill Walkman. I've been a resident of Alaska for 47 years, and I've been a guide for 40 years. I got my first guide license from the territory back in 1947. At that time, and all during the territorial days, a non-resident had to have a gun if he wanted to go to Kima. Actually, the reason I got my first grade license was because of the fact that can't you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
The reason I got my first grade license was because of the fact that my father was coming to Alaska and I wanted to take him hunting. I went to the Fish and Wildlife Service and he said, "Sorry, Bill, but you're going to have to become a guide in order to take your dad hunt." Well, I asked them why that was, and they said, "Well, this is a rough country. We have very changeable climate. So the weather can change overnight. You catch out there, you don't know what you're doing. Hypothermia. And you're in trouble. Besides, this is a wild, woolly country, and you're liable to get eaten by a bear." Well, I've been in this field ever since 1940 here in Alaska, hunting big game and guiding out, guiding parts. I've never been attacked by a bear, but I would have lost my bacon a couple of times because of the weather. Now, when we enacted our first guide law, I helped write that original law and was in the Senate at the time and nurtured the thing and wrote it, rewrote it with Jay Hammond. And well, I was one of the sponsors on the bill. At that time, we made a big mistake. We should have put moose, caribou, and goats in that sky bill. This present Senate Bill 191 and the companion bill from the House, I don't think does the job. I think there are several changes that should be made in our guide law. opinion has been proven to be a guide for a certain length of time, a guide in good standing for a certain length of time, he should be permitted to transfer that guide area to anybody he chooses that has a light guide in good standing. At the present time, you want to transfer your guide area, it's according to the whims of the guide board. That's not right. I can see a big change in our game and the quality of hunting, especially in the last 10 years. Fairbanks and Anchorage are being impacted right now with increased number of troops. Those young fellows should be able to get out in the hill. But they're going to impact our hunting a great deal. In the last 4 or 5 years, these so-called outfitters and taxi operators have made it in certain areas, in the Railville area especially, so that the quality of hunting is about the same as it is back in Pennsylvania and New York, plus Virginia, where there's a hunter behind every tree. In one of our wilderness areas here, just across the river, last year, they had enough hunters in there for a guy to open up a hot dog stand to make a buck. You could rent a cabin. You could rent a horse. Or you could hire somebody to go and pick up your game. Our game in Alaska is vast as Alaska is, cannot stand the kind of pressure that the non-residents and that the military are going to give it. I'm very surprised that the people off the bush, the subsistence hunters, are not raising more cane with regard to the impact that these outfitters are making on the game. As vast as Alaska is, you would think that there would be no problem spread out a few thousand extra people for harvesting. There's vast areas in Alaska where there are no game. And when you go through the air terminals, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Kodiak, wherever, during hunting season, and see the number of hunters coming to and from Alaska with their guns and trophies, drive down the highway during hunting season and see the numbers of moose racks, caribou racks, on top pickup. You realize that our hunting is being impacted a great deal. This non-resident thing has become a plague. These guys are everywhere. Canada doesn't allow them to hunt without a guide. And Alaska shouldn't either. We only have so much game here in Alaska. We can only propagate so much game here in Alaska. And we better start thinking of the residents of Alaska. The man from the outside wants to come in here, let him hire a guy. It's not going to affect my income any. over the hill as far as guiding is concerned. But we also got to think of the resource first. This old Andy Clamon, who was on the guide board and the dean of all guides, the guide fraternity, was asked one time, Andy, what do you attribute your success as a the guide and member of the speaking game force to? And Andy's answer was, when we have a tough decision to make with regard to the guide, with regard to the game in Alaska, I just think to myself, what's good for the game? And that's what we best do. Think what's good for the game. That's about all I have to say. Any questions?
Are there any questions on the project? Hearing none, thank you very much for your comments about afterwards.
Thank you.
I'd like to come back here to Acres and to Jay, do you want to sign off?
Good morning, my name is Ed Grasser. I'm here to testify for myself, and I'd like to express my appreciation to Representative Herman and other members of the legislature for providing this opportunity to do so. First of all, in this controversy, I know there's a little history presented yesterday, but I think it's important to look back a few years and remember what was going on in the early 60s, throughout the late 60s in the guiding industry. Because of certain practices by certain guides, a need was created for more regulation. There was a time when you could fly around and land and shoot things perfectly legally. Because a few people abused that, that would be a bad practice, and we had to outlaw it. The reason we had to outlaw it is because we were concerned about the conservation of the game. As time went by, there was a need for more and more regulations on the guide industry, more restrictive regulations, to keep them in line and to provide better conservation measures for the game. I believe that the area concept, or the restrictive guide area concept, is part of this restrictive measure to provide better conservation. It created a impetus for the guide industry to watch out for what they were doing because they were restricted to an area. They could no longer pack everything into their airplane and move on to the next valley. The valley that they were assigned to was how to do them. I think that there's a legitimate commercial use for probably most of Alaska's natural resource in some shape or fashion. I think the state has done a good job in providing an outlet for those pursuits. I think that the regulations and the system for guiding has been put in place. It's a good system, although it may be rather restrictive into the empty part of it. It's no more restrictive than, say, the commercial fishing industry. I'm sure if someone on a processor decided that it was perfectly okay for them to find a loophole in the law and start throwing nets overboard, that somebody in the commercial fishing industry would probably raise some kind of question, and I don't doubt but whether the processors would be eliminated from fishing. I think that's what we're looking at here. If a person wants to accompany people out in the field as a guide, he should probably go through the provided for system that the state has set up. However, if we're going to accommodate people that are outfitters, then they're going to have to recognize the fact that they need to be regulated. Too many of them are going into areas with a lot of people moving on to the next area. This is becoming more and more prevalent in certain parts of the state, and I've personally witnessed it. I think a good place to start would probably be to pass either 191 or House Bill 183, restricting outfitters from operating in the field. And by in the field, I mean accompanying hunters beyond, I guess, a lodge or a boat or a base camp, whether for the purpose of making a video or any other reason. because the outfitters that are legally operating are going to have to recognize the fact, just as the guides did, that it's the illegal outfitters, not the guides, that are trying to shut them down. The illegal outfitters are abusing the law by accompanying people in the field because there's no way to enforce whether or not they're in the field. If they're present in a camp, like a flight camp, which is not a fairly permanent base camp area, who's going to say whether they accompanied the person in the field or not and provided guiding services? Our limited budget and limited enforcement personnel have no way of checking on that. However, if you land in a flight camp situation, the enforcement person checks, and there is an assistant or an outfitter in the flight camp with a non-guided hunter, and it was against the law, they would have something there. So I think it's very important we look at that, and I think it's important because it's the illegal outfitters that are causing it, not the guides. Guides are not causative. I think one other thing we could do is probably require a licensing procedure for outfitters, require the outfitters, especially the outfitters that are providing mostly air transport. They're actually operating as an air taxi without a license. What they have to do is probably pay the same kind of insurance that an air taxi operator pays. I think this would further restrict the number of people that are illegally outfitting. And as a last consideration, I think, just as in the area concept for guides, that probably the state should impose some kind of quota on the outfitters. First, they should be licensed, and they should go through some kind of exam to get that license. And then they probably should have some kind of permitting system where they can come in, kind of maybe like on the old days in Kodiak, where before they had areas, all the guides would have to line up at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or the State Fish and Game Office, and it was on a first-come, first-served basis for the bear permits that were handed out that year. Perhaps something like that could work for the outfitters, that they'd have to go on a permitting basis for, say, X amount of moose hunters a year and X amount of caribou hunters a year, or whatever they were outfitting for. I think if we look at it in that way and realize that this problem is created by those people that are illegally outfitting and abusing the system, and not by the people that are guiding or maybe the legal outfitters, that we can do something constructive about this. Thank you once again for allowing me to testify.
Are there any questions from the
Ed
Hines has a
question?
Yeah, Ed,
where would you draw the line
between non-guided hunters? Well, if I had to draw a line, I guess I would have to say that as a guide, I should be able to provide certain services, including hiring assistance and what all to provide a hunt and accompany the person and personally direct that hunter at all times during his hunt. I don't believe an outfitter should be allowed to do that, basically because of the restrictions placed on the guiding industry and the system that's already been put in place. I believe an outfitter may have a legitimate area of operation within transport of clients and maybe providing camping materials, etc. I don't think that outfitters should be able to hire cooks and put them out in every spike camp they have, etc. I think that there's too much tendency there for the cook, quote unquote, or whatever assistant or help the outfitter may put into a spike camp. There's too great of a tendency for that person to become an unlicensed guide, in my opinion.
I think the main problem definition of in the field, I have no problem with transporters by air or water or even outfitters that provide camps, but I don't believe that they should be able to go out in the field with clients, most of them don't, fight in the field.